Hello there! This show contains material which a truly free society would neither fear nor suppress. The language and concepts contained herein will not cause eternal torment in the place where the guy with the horns and pointed stick conducts his business.
Yo, man, what's going on?
Guess what I got the other day?
Is it something you need a shot for?
No.
Is it something you need a beating for?
No. I was walking through the streets of Chicago, and I was near the Sears Tower, and I got a free dummy.
Oh. I thought you actually went to Chicago for work or something.
Ha! Tricked you.
Oh, I'm so darn gullible sometimes.
Gullible. No, free dummy. Jack Handy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jack Handy rules.
The story behind that is every once in a while I'll bust out with, hey, free dummy. And John apparently on his iGoogle desktop has random Jack Handy quotes, and that one showed up last week, so he emailed it to me.
Yeah, and the full quote, I guess, goes something like, if you ever fall off the Sears Tower, go limp, because people will think you're a dummy, and someone might catch you, because, hey, free dummy.
Exactly.
It's beautiful.
Who in the world doesn't want a free dummy?
Well, apparently that saved my life.
What does that mean?
I was walking through Chicago and I got myself a free dummy, and the dummy was, you know, the one piece of, you know, my life that it was missing.
This what is this going to be, a one joke show? We're just going to keep talking about the free
dummy? You
know
what? Free dummy. There you go. That's my contribution to the show today.
Yeah. Well, geez, I don't know if I have much for the intro, to be honest. How do you follow that, you know? Hey.
You can always follow it with Uncle Bear or whatever his name, Uncle Caveman.
Uncle Caveman?
You don't remember that, Jack Handy? Uncle Caveman?
Oh, yeah, you sent me that one, too.
Yeah.
That's right. Geez, I want to thank Chris, Donna, and Ken. And by Chris, I mean Garlic Chris and my friend Donna and Ken. We went out last night, and apparently the evening was on them. So, you know, we had some nice foods and some nice drinks. And I didn't have to pay a dime, so what's better than that?
The golf clap is what they deserve.
Rachel's going for his next shot.
That's from...
wearing his pink pants.
What movie did they do that in where they played garbage men? Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez. Men at Work? Is that what that was called?
I have no idea. I've never seen a show or a movie with both of them.
I think it was called Men at Work, and they played garbage men. And at one point in it, they went, golf clap. So they all did that.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what's going on other than free food?
Nothing. Anything with you?
Nothing.
Just work?
Just work. I'm having trouble sleeping. Headaches. I've got this tumor growing in the back of my neck. That's about it.
Actually,
nothing new.
I have a friend named Joe, and I think you know the one I mean. I won't mention last names. And he actually did have a tumor on the back of his neck and had to have it removed.
Was it his twin?
I don't think it was. But you know what he ended up with? You know how, like, on Frankenstein, there's that scar, which is the one vertical line and all the cross stitches?
You got it, yep.
He actually has that scar. The sort of Frankenstein scar with the, you know, the one line and the sort of cross stitching. Sort of like the seam on a football.
I know. Those scars are really hard to pronounce.
They are. Sometimes. Except nobody's going to know I didn't pronounce it good the first three times. The miracle of editing.
Yeah. Well, we used to say, let's make this a really raw show. Let's not do any editing. Screw that. I'm not even the right guy. I'm a female. And Rich edits me every time. Makes me sound like this.
I throw a plug in on your voice.
That's right.
You know, John actually came up with a fun idea the other day, and I can't take credit for it because I actually don't remember suggesting we do a live webcast, but John got the idea. What did you find? Some open source software?
Yeah, there's this open source software called VideoLAN, and if you want to check this out, it's videolan.org. I was looking for something that would be free. Obviously, I don't want to pay for anything. It'd be free that would convert videos. Because if I've got a video and I want to watch it on my little infernal device, as Rich calls it, or anywhere else for that matter, I don't want to have to...
the device that earned you a beating.
That's right. I don't want to have to pay for any software to take a video that I've already got and watch it somewhere else, you know. Oh, yeah. We've got some really cool wine here, by the way. I'll mention that in a sec. So anyways, Videolan. It's this software. Check it out, videolan.org. Not land, video, L-A-N.
Like local area network.
That's right. And this does all sorts of conversion, and it also does...
currency conversion?
Yeah, it'll convert to euros. Everything's to euros for some reason. I don't know. I think the whole world is going to be euros soon. But I like their symbol, the little E. Mm. It'll convert any format to any format, and it'll also allow you to play it. There's a little client player, which is pretty good because it does a good job of converting any kind of video format for play as well. But it also will produce a stream. So you can put together a URL, and anyone can hit that URL, and it'll stream the video down. So it acts as a streaming server. So we thought, hey, what the heck? You know, maybe we can put a webcam on, and if someone wants to watch the show live and see exactly
see
what we do,
pre-edit,
see all the magic that's made here in this room.
Well, and it's funny because John emailed me and said something like, "Remember you had that idea to do a live stream of our show?" And I honestly don't remember ever suggesting that. I just have no memory of that. I had a different idea that I stole from a friend named Leo. But
what was the different idea?
It was
digging up bodies and making a human.
No, digging up the cellar and putting bodies in the cellar.
Oh, putting them in. I thought you were talking about taking them out. And
no. No, my idea, borrowed from our friend Leo from Neural Gourmet, was to just shoot us with a digital video camera and just added a 5-minute commercial.
I'd say camera.
And upload it to YouTube, which I think we should do. I think that'll be fun. I got a friend with a really nice new high-end DVD.
Does he have penicillin?
Digital video camera, and he's willing to just let me have it for a month.
That would be awesome.
So it might be fun to do, and who knows, maybe we'll try the web casting thing too.
We can make some art films.
As John pointed out, or some kind of films, as John pointed out, his server doesn't have a high bandwidth, so if like more than two people hit us.
Meaning if all three of our listeners hit our site looking at the video, we're down.
Yeah, we got problems.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We have other problems.
What are we drinking today?
We're drinking some hooch. I mean, I'm telling you, man, these Australians, these Aussies, they know how to make some good hooch.
Yeah, he's over here belching. No, and he's telling us that.
Hiccuping. I'm doing the, what was that guy who did the drunk, was it Red Skelton who did
Red
the drunk?
Red Skelton was famous for doing a drunk, yeah.
Anyways, Rosemount Shiraz, one of my favorites. Rich brought over a 2005.
Which I had prior to today, and I mentioned that on a show a few months ago, I think.
And this is, you know, their typical Rosemount Diamond, they call it. It has a diamond label. But they've gone with a new bottle. It's a really cool bottle. It starts out like a normal bottle from the top down, but on the bottom...
it's round.
Yeah, round. And it turns into a square. It's odd. It's cool.
So what hole do you put it into? Square, peg, round, hole. Round,
it depends
peg,
on
square,
which
hole.
Side.
It works both holes, apparently.
It's versatile wine. It's hole agnostic.
It's hole indifferent.
That's right. You can put it in any kind of rack or hole.
You know, there's another guy who was famous for playing the drunk, and it wasn't just Red Skelton, and I can see him in my mind's eye. No, but I can't remember
Grady?
The guy's name.
Who played Grady?
I don't know, but Letterman had him on a few years ago. They found,
he's still alive?
They searched him out. Well, he may be dead now, but a few years ago he was still alive. They found Grady.
I know that Esther's dead.
Who played Gene Gene the Dancing Machine?
Oh, from the Gong Show.
And they used to throw those giant plastic vegetables and fruit at him.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, that was great.
And then whenever Gene Gene the Dancing Machine came out, you'd have Chuck Barris on the side doing this crazy dance and pulling his hat down.
And as I understand it, Gene Gene the Dancing Machine was just stage crew from that
was
stage.
He?
Yeah, and they just worked him into the show, which I thought was really cool.
Well, and apparently Chuck Barris is an assassin for the CIA, but you never know.
He has many talents. And he's a guitar player. Did you ever see him on the side jamming with the band? Yeah, he can play a little guitar.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember him playing through a Vox amp and playing a Gibson Flying V.
Flying V?
Yeah, Chuck Barris. And he always had the fedora hat on, like, you know, sort of in a rakish tilt over his eyes.
Yeah, he always pulled the hat down. And I read something about that where they said that he would always pull his hat down over his eyes because he was so fearful of being on stage.
Really?
He was really a nervous wreck, so he'd pull the hat down kind of as a...
Just to,
you know,
so he wouldn't see the audience.
Hiding from
something.
The audience.
He's right. I don't know. You want to play a tune?
Yeah, let's hit it.
All right, let's check it out. We'll be right back.
Guys,
that is one of two bands that we have played that have used tuba for the bass.
That's right.
That was Ramashka. The and other band was
the Four Bags.
The Four Bags, yeah.
The name of that song was called Loli Fabay. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Loliphabay.
Yep.
Sounds like a person. I'm wondering who this person is.
Her first name is Loli or Lolly. Lolly, Lolly, Lolly. Get your adverbs here.
What's that from?
You don't remember that?
No.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you.
I'm appalled. Me here? Appalled. Shocked. Stunned.
The look of consternation and appall on John's face has
Schoolhouse Rock?
I was not a fan of the Schoolhouse Rock. I used to watch some of the other stuff. But Leo loves the Schoolhouse Rock.
Maybe he should be on the show.
We've had him on the show. So
no, I mean, maybe he should be on the show sitting where you're sitting.
He should be in this seat, yeah. Okay, does that mean I get a vacation?
Yes. You're fired. Wait, I'm not the guy with the weird hair. What's his name? Donald Trump.
Oh, right. And he says you're hired once.
You're fired.
Once per season.
That's right.
His daughter's on the show now, isn't she?
She's bizarre.
I don't really watch the show, but I know that the sort of other woman who used to be on the show isn't, and
she's fired.
Perhaps. And what's his daughter's
name? Oh, she left the Trump organization.
Oh, she actually did leave the Trump organization. What's the daughter's name? It's sort of like the ex-wife's
Ivanka.
Name. Ivanka. What is that? What kind of name is Ivanka?
It's a kind of truck.
That's right.
They used
to have a big yellow dump truck made out of metal, which are really valuable now, but now they're made out of plastic and they suck.
I had those metal Tonka trucks.
I had the metal Tonkas too. I had the fire truck with the white ladder.
Oh, really?
It was the bomb, dude. I had the big yellow dump truck.
I had the yellow dump truck.
Did you have the G.I. Joes?
The big ones, like the 6 feet tall ones?
Yeah, the original foot-tall G.I. Joes with the fuzzy hair.
Yep, and the Kung Fu grip.
I never had the Kung Fu grip.
You know, I used to have the G.I. Joes, and
you graduated to Barbie.
Hey, most fashion designers start with Barbie. In fact, some stay with Barbie. The G.I. Joe that I used to have in my old house when I was a kid, we had an upstairs bedroom.
South Utica?
No, New Hartford.
Oh.
Upstairs bedroom, way upstairs, and it looked down on the side yard that was weird. It kind of went downhill. So it was really high up in the air, that upstairs bedroom window, because it was like the height of the house plus like another 6 foot dip down. We used to take the G.I. Joes and launch them out the window.
With the parachute? With the G.I. Joe parachute?
No, no parachute.
No.
These guys, you know, the chute was failing for them. And we'd see just, you know, how they'd land. And I had so many of those G.I. Joes that were just busted into pieces because of that. And now they're going on eBay for like $300.
I bought a couple of reissues from F.A.O. Schwartz. I bought the reissue of the Gemini astronaut and the
Did
silver
you buy
space
that?
Suit. I've got it. Yeah,
oh,
it's
that's
great.
Priceless.
And I actually found a local vintage toy store that had an original capsule. So I bought an original Gemini capsule.
You do not have the capsule.
I have the capsule. And I have the Mercury. I think he's Mercury astronaut with the silver suit.
Wow.
And
that's
then,
cool.
And then for Christmas that year...
Did you have one burn up in like the Apollo 1 accident?
That's not even funny, dude.
You should have done that. You know, it's a reenactment. It's historically accurate.
That's Apollo 1, not Mercury.
Okay.
And, oh, God. And then for Christmas, like, somebody in my family went to Toys R Us and bought me, like, a Gene Cernan or a Buzz Aldrin G.I. Joe, too, that year.
They had them made to look like the guys?
Yeah. And I don't think it's them, though. It's not Cernan or Aldrin. It's another one of the guys. It's one of the late-era Apollo astronauts. He might have flown one of the Skylab missions, and he was one of the first shuttle pilots. He may have actually flown Crippen. Rob Crippen.
Was it Crippen?
It was Rob Crippen, yeah. I think he flew the first shuttle flight ever back in 82 or whatever. He was one of the two guys that did the first test. And so, yeah, I have the Crippen astronaut G.I. Joe, too.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they actually, at one point
in time...
Did
they have Kung Fu Grip?
No, they don't know. I never got the Kung Fu Grip. When those came out... I remember sending the parents out, like, you know, for the Christmas errand, and the Kung Fu Grip was sold out, and I never got a Kung Fu Grip
G.I.
Joe. We used to have the original G.I. Joes with the painted hair, and then a little later they had the fuzzy hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I never had the Kung Fu Grip.
My favorite G.I. Joe had the scar under his eye.
Yeah, I think all G.I. Joes had the scar, though. I think that was one of the symbols of the G.I. Joe.
Well, the one that I'm thinking of in particular had the red fuzzy hair.
Yeah, I had a red fuzzy hair G.I. Joe.
And he had the scar under his eye, and it seemed like it was maybe a little bit brighter than the normal scar. Maybe because he was a redhead.
He
had
maybe
a lighter
he needed
complexion.
Some plastic surgery.
He had the Kung Fu Grip, and my favorite playset with that was the Deep Sea Diver kit. And the helmet
was
a real metal helmet.
Yeah, it was the old school diver helmet where they would pump air down to you.
It was like a brass helmet.
Yeah, the brass helmet.
And it was heavy. And he came with lead weights. I mean, talk about a toy that's dangerous. It had actual lead weights.
Lead weights. And if I'm not mistaken, the helmet was painted with lead paint.
Right, and they had real explosives. So
and they gave you a little vial of thalidomide with that.
Working ammunition and all the guns. It was like classic G.I. Joe stuff.
Yeah, I used to have the yellow truck with the spinning radar dish, too. And it had a satellite launcher. And my brother had it was like a suitcase, and you would open it up, and it was a command center.
No way.
Yeah, we were crazy with the G.I. Joes, yo.
And I had the helicopter.
Yes.
Do you remember the one-man helicopter?
Yeah, you used the thumb to spin
the
thing.
I had that one. It was like the best Christmas ever. I had this helicopter showed up because it was the only thing I ever wanted. And then my brother got one, too, and I was like bummed because he got
one. Helicopters. And you know what? I didn't have the helicopter or my brother, but... Timmy Weber down the street, one of our G.I. Joe neighbors, had the helicopter.
Bastard.
I know. And the other day, it's really funny because I was thinking about the Weber family and whatever happened to them all because they were like our best neighborhood friends in the 70s.
He was killed in a G.I. Joe accident?
He could have been. So, you know, I got a couple of things here for the center. Actually, not that much. We each have a couple of little things for the middle. What the hell was that? What popped, yo?
Don't you know that?
That was the baseball noise?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, we talked about the Tour de France, right? Team Discovery / U.S. Postal Service won 8 out of the last 9 Tours de France, which may be...
It's a very weak team, as teams go.
Well, in the history of any sports franchises, that may be the most successful run ever, you know, winning 8 out of 9.
It's an 8-peat. They don't even have a term for it. They have
Well, it was a 7-peat, and then a no-peat, and then a 1-peat.
I don't get that.
Well, they won 7 in a row with Lance. Then they didn't do so well last year.
Oh, that's right.
And then this year, they were first and third. Now, the shocking thing to me was, and I mentioned this on one of the shows, there's a guy from Utica who is their marketing director or their...
Oh, that's right. We did mention
press
that.
Press director or something.
That was early on we mentioned that.
Yeah, he's a local guy named PJ, real nice guy. I used to work with him, actually, a few years ago. And he had been telling us, because, you know... One of my old bosses is great friends with him, and he would get like the live Tour de France update on the phone. He would call PJ in France and find out what's going on as he rides in the team car with Johan Bernil, the team director, you know?
Team car must be a Subaru.
It might have been. And he had said they were having trouble getting sponsorship. There were rumors that it was going to be Hewlett-Packard, blah, 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 blah. And then there was some rumors after the doping stuff, which, as we talked about a few weeks ago, I don't have a problem with. I think it's healthy. They're catching them. But anyway, you know, there are probably a lot of sponsors who don't want to get on board. But anyway,
what about GlaxoSmithKline or one of those guys?
Well, I'm, you know, with Lance Armstrong as one of the team owners, why can't he just march into Bill Gates' office and say, give us $20 million a year for a couple of years? It's not, you know, Bill Gates could write a check. He's got it in his pocket, you know?
You know what their response will be?
I don't know.
Okay.
that might be it. Or the other guy, Paul Allen, for crying out loud.
I know. He's doing like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He can sponsor a team.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what it would be called. Maybe the Seattle Rock and Roll Hall of Fame cycling team. You will see him on the sidelines of the mountain with like two fingers in the air going, yeah, rock and roll. So anyway, Tailwind Sports is the name of the parent organization that owns the team, you know, and they've had two different sponsors in the past 9 years. They've had U.S. Postal and Discovery, but Tailwind Sports, of which Lance Armstrong is part owner, has announced that even though they did have sponsors lined up, they are disbanding the team. They will not be continuing after the '07 season, which is a bit of a bummer for me because it gave me somebody to root for, you know.
It's kind of like Mike Tyson saying, I'm not going to box anymore.
Well, what does that mean?
Well... Did they bite someone's ear off?
No,
the analogy's a little off.
And here's what Lance said. We pulled up that article on Velo News. You probably didn't take a long look at it, but basically what Lance was quoted as saying was, we're there. We have the sponsors, but, you know, we just don't want to put them into an uncomfortable position or something, you know, where there may be some doping scandals or something. I don't know. But at the end of the day, his final reason for not wanting to continue the team was that he basically has other things going on. He has the Lance Armstrong Foundation. He's fighting cancer. So to me, those first things, talking about the sponsors and not wanting to put them in a place where that might be uncomfortable for them, is an excuse. It sounds to me like Lance just wants to be somewhere else in his life right now and doesn't want to be part owner of a cycling team, you know?
To me, that sort of implies that maybe there's some other stuff that might be coming out and he's trying to protect any other future sponsor.
I may have misworded that to sound like that, but, you know, it was... What he was saying was very ambiguous. The only really solid, you know, thing that he said was that he has other things going on in his life, like the Lance Armstrong Foundation. So it just sounds to me like Lance doesn't want to be part owner of a cycling team right now, and he just wants to focus on...
He just wants to be friends and see other people.
He wants to focus on... They're on a break. He wants to focus on curing cancer, and that's cool.
Can he do something else on the side? I mean, that's just a part-time job.
Well, and you know, for a big cycling fan like me, you know, I had riders to root for on an American cycling team. I mean, George Hincapie, one of the great lieutenants of Lance's, he was on the last 9 teams that Lance's 7 victories in the most recent one. He already got signed by T-Mobile, you know, so he's going to be riding for them next year.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, so these guys are already looking for jobs. But for me, it's just kind of a bummer, you know, because Lance said they were having sponsorship issues, but then he said it wasn't the sponsorship. They were 90% there, but we decided to go elsewhere. So anyway, you know, farewell, but I'm going to miss him.
They couldn't find a good source of blood platelets.
Yeah, whatever.
Sorry.
There's all kinds of sources.
Their supplier decided to pull
Perhaps
out.
Perhaps you've never heard of the Red Cross.
Oh, them, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, well, yeah. Didn't you always used to see the Discovery bus behind all of the... it wasn't a Red Cross bus. It was the Discovery bus that was doing all those, blood donations.
They put stickers over it.
Yeah, they just put a Red Cross sticker over Team Discovery, you know.
Yeah, we're not doing a blood drive. We're doing prep for the team, yeah.
Oh, anyway, what else happened in the past week?
The big giant fathead in San Francisco hit the home run.
Giant, no pun?
Nah, no pun at all. I didn't intend that. I mean, he's got a big, giant, fat head, and he also plays for the Giants.
And he's bristling with muscles. And you know what? He earned every one of them by working hard in the gym and eating lots of, you know, I don't know.
Horse urine.
Lots of, just eating lots of tuna.
Yeah, he's an all-natural guy. That's all I've got to say.
Well, so, we talked about how, you know, my idea or whatever, my preference would have been that he not break the record. And, you know, I would have been happy if every team intentionally walked him for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I was actually going for the more active role of actually hitting him with the ball. You know, you take the base either way, but at least they get some frustrations out by putting some bruises on his body.
One news reporter that I saw, maybe in a post-game press conference or something, actually had the courage to say the words, "Now, do you think the record is tainted?"
And he That's right.
He just went off with the, "No, it's not tainted, period, because I said so, and yeah, you know."
Well, right, and I think that Bob Costas made some sort of comment about Barry Bonds, and he came back and said the eloquent Bob Costas is a stupid midget or something like that.
Did he?
Yeah. I mean, the guy
is
just...
Well, he is a stupid midget.
They call them dwarves, Rich. he's just a mean person.
He's certainly not friendly, and I mean, it's no secret that he isn't even liked by his own team. You know, he has his little secluded room with the Xbox and the massaging Barker lounger easy chair.
He's got his own little dialysis machine there.
There's several IV tubes and a couple of Red Cross nurses there.
Yeah, it's...
And if I'm not mistaken, there are several cyclists that hang out in that room as well.
It's weird. All these cyclists show up to these Giants games. It's just
I don't know what it is.
Well, you know, you got to go where the stuff is at.
Well, you know what? And I guess maybe for Barry Bonds, the record isn't tainted. But for me, I can only speak for myself. Taint. There's a lot of taint.
There's a lot of taint in the air.
Taintitude. I don't even know.
There's some taintification on that.
And you know what? I thought of another good George Bush word.
Bushism?
Yeah, I thought of another Bush word. Crushificate.
Crushify that crushificator.
Crushification.
Yeah. Well,
you got a compliment, by the way, from one of our listeners in L.A. He thought he said you did a good George Bush, but you're really not doing Bush. You're more doing Will Ferrell, who is doing Bush.
Well, sure. I mean, I don't claim to do anyone well. Not even me.
Your girlfriend's been saying that for years, yo.
Oh, my God. We need that. Ba-dum-bum. No, well, the thing with Barry Bonds is I heard one argument by someone on the radio about how the taintage might not be so bad, because this entire era of baseball where Barry Bonds sort of got all bumped up and hit all of the big home runs and had most of his great seasons, they said, you know, there are a lot of pitchers who are also juiced up. So... They're trying to make a claim that there was some sort of semblance of an even playing field.
Right, right.
And I do not buy that for a minute.
You know what? Somebody at work gave me that same argument, and it was Dave, actually. The mutual workmate of ours. And my argument is, well, the pitchers weren't going for any sort of record.
See, to me, it's not even about that. It's about... Someone's claiming that there's an even playing field. Well, you know what? It's not an even playing field unless every single pitcher was juiced up. And even then, it's not an even playing field because the stadiums didn't get wider when those people were juiced up. It's wrong.
They didn't get longer either.
Longer, wider.
Deeper.
Deeper.
Taller.
Whatever. Taller.
Walking taller.
It's not like they had like a little target that... You get extra points for hitting. I mean, nothing changed other than Barry Bonds and maybe a few other pitchers. So, to me, the hitting, the pitching, the going out of the park, all taint. Taintification, man.
There's a lot of taintititude.
There's enough taint to go around.
There's no lack of taint. I mean, there's definitely... I think certainly we can agree on that, if nothing else. I mean, Republicans and Democrats are coming together and they're agreeing that there's no lack of taint.
You know what? They reached across the aisle and they taintified.
There's no more wine in this bottle, dude.
You know what we have to do?
I don't know.
Reach into the wine cellar and grab some more.
Yeah, we've got the cellar here. There's a sign over the actual wine cellar that says Dad's Wine.
Yeah, my daughter made a hand-drawn sign.
And actually right now, no, there's a bottle of wine in there right now, too. There's that double-aught Syrah.
Yeah. We have to break that open.
It's mellow. It's mild. I like it.
Are the Mets playing today?
Yes, they are playing Florida. They lost yesterday, and they are playing today at 7:10 at Shea Stadium.
Yeah, good old Shea.
I watched a little Mets channel there, SNY, and they were doing a little retrospective on the haircut do's and don'ts that the Mets have had in the past, well, for their whole career. And they showed, like, afros from the 70s.
Did they show any mullets?
Well, they showed the probably early 90s to mid-90s when the bleach blonde thing was in. And the Mets had a Japanese player named Tsuyoshi Shinjo who had the bleach going. And Mike Piazza actually did the
Piazza?
Bleach. Right. His hair couldn't be blacker, right, with a name like Piazza. And he bleach blonded his hair, and it looked so wrong. You know?
He looked like he should be playing for, what, Sugar Ray, one of those things.
Exactly. Anything else? What was the other big news thing? Anything? Or?
Oh, the only other thing was DRM, the world of DRM. Apparently.
Digital rights management.
Well, here's two things. People should go online and they should do a little Google for Cory Doctorow.
Googly.
Cory. It's in Cory, like Corey Feldman.
Mm-hmm.
Doctorow.
But
as
not.
As in E.L. Doctorow, but no relation.
Mm-hmm.
And they should do a search for him and DRM, and he did a little podcast spot. He did an interview with one of these podcasts. I'll try to find the link and put it up there. But it got me interested in listening to some more issues about DRM. And I found out, well, Universal Music Group, which is one of the big labels, and Rich said they've got a music group or they've got a label.
I thought they were just pictures, Universal Pictures.
No, but apparently they own a lot of big acts like U2 and
I've heard of them.
Yeah, some of the big bands. Well, they are, I think, one of the largest owners, and they probably have subsidiaries, which, you know, sound more cool.
A lot of smaller labels and things like that attached to them.
Yeah, they're one of the big evil empires of the music industry, and they decided that they're going to start a little experiment going DRM free because they've realized that, hey, you know what? We're making it harder for people to get our music. We're the ones encouraging the pirators, the people that we, you know, claim to be fighting.
Well, and at the end of the day, guys like you and I can circumvent all that crap anyways. Smart, you know, it's pointless, really.
Well, and I think what Cory Doctorow said in this interview on this podcast is hackers and average people, they break DRM for breakfast. I mean, this is not a difficult thing to do.
You know what I love about digital propagation and digital media in general is that the labels and the networks and the movie studios sort of adopted digital. I mean, not just because it's the wave of the future, but because they thought they could exert all of this control over digital. And then they realized that a lot of this control could be cracked, and then people could make perfect, exact copy because it's digital media. There's such an interesting little what's the word I want? I mean, there's a
conundrum.
Yeah, well, not a conundrum, but it's almost like it's
enigma.
Not enigma. It's just ironic that they adopted this digital media because they thought they could exert all this control, and yet when we can get around their controls, we have exact copies of the media that they're trying to protect. Unlike in the analog world, where anytime you make a copy, you have generational loss, you know?
Right, and then you've got guys selling tapes in front of a dead show.
Yeah, well, no, they give dead tapes away.
Well,
the dead,
you know, I mean,
is cool with that. I mean, that's fine. There's plenty of bands, including Bella Fleck, who don't mind recording their live shows and trading them on the internet. Great. In fact, we've played some live recordings.
That's
of
right.
Fleck, and I'll have to start finding more of those, actually, because we struggled to find music for today's show.
But the reason why I brought up the whole podcast interview with Cory Doctorow is because he brings up very good points, like, you know what, this whole concept of protecting the music is ridiculous, because the people who are trading in music are not the people who are going to go to the mall and buy a CD. These are people who are going to be downloading the music anyways. They're going to be getting that music illegally anyways.
Malls are dead.
No, they're not dead. Have you ever been to a mall?
Not in a while. I used to work in a mall.
I went to a mall the other day to pick up an Infernal device, and man, it's like packed.
Yeah, but at
kids.
The same time, I think brick and mortar stores are going the way of the dinosaur. You know, the internet has really changed everything.
But people still like to congregate. You're not going to get rid of that. People are social beings. They like
that's
to congregate.
That's just the mob thing, you know?
No.
The mob rules.
No.
No.
I'm not talking about congregate
no.
and break windows and pillage. But anyways, this whole DRM thing. Well, the raping goes along with
pillaging.
That's
exactly.
Right. And you have to wear the Viking hats. Viking hats are the only reason why I'd go.
With bagels on the end of the horns, which is a reference to Flavor Flav. But anyway.
Jeez. Well, anyways. Yeah, the DRM thing. So the people who put these restrictions, they're locking down their music, inadvertently are the ones who are promoting the breakage of the music.
Well, we've known that all along, and they're finally realizing
they're,
it.
They're
Bang,
finally realizing
light bulb,
it.
Light bulb over my head, over their head.
Yeah, and the funny thing is they decided to go with Apple and iTunes because they thought, you know what, we're going to go with Apple and iTunes because Apple is the number one distributor of purchased music. We can get them to put DRM on their music.
And they sell Infernal Devices.
And they're the number one distributor of Infernal Devices.
Although I do, from what I've read, iPhone sales is not as good as they hoped they would be.
They're pretty damn good, though.
It's down.
If I was working for Apple, I'd be making money right now, so I'm not going to complain.
Well, thankfully you're not working for Apple. The sooner they go out of business, the better off the world's
going to
be.
You know what? If I was working for Apple, I'd be getting a free iPhone.
You might.
So anyways...
Which is good, because then when I smash them with hammers, at least you have a replacement.
You're not going to put it in a blender? So, anyway, to finish my story, let me finish this. So, they went and they got in bed with Apple, literally.
Whoa.
They got in bed with Apple, and they said, Apple's going to protect our music, because we're going to get the most distribution, we're going to go with the premium outlet here, and we're going to agree to their 99 cent per track thing. Because, you know, maybe we'll negotiate down the line. And then they realized, wait a minute here, we're tied to Apple because the Apple DRM only allows you to play the Apple-encoded music on an Apple Infernal device.
Exactly. Any of their Infernal devices.
And
it's an Apple Infernal device and not a Microsoft Zune.
Only three people own those anyways.
And one of them's our listener, actually. One of our listeners owns a Zuni.
He's
Hey, John.
He's a brave soul. So... They woke up again and said, wait a minute, we're tied to Apple. We want to sell more of our music because we're in the business of, you know, selling stuff and making money. We want to sell more of our music and we can't because everything's tied to Apple. And the only way to get away from that is to do the thing that we hate, and that is get rid of our DRM.
No, it's to un-Apple-mate fly-itude.
They want to un-Apple-fly.
They de-Appled themselves.
They cut some amplification out. So what ended up happening was they got wise, unfortunately they're doing it out of greed again, they got wise to the whole Apple thing and said, you know what, we're going to cut DRM out because it frees us from the bonds of Apple.
Well, good for them. Anything that is freeing one from the bonds of Appleness is okay by me. Is that the end of the story?
So I'm just really psyched that they're waking up.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
I'm saying and I am saying.
You want to play another song?
Yeah, let's play it.
Let's check out a tune.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Who was that, Big Al and the Stoners?
That was guitarist Alan Holdsworth.
Sounded a lot like a Casio little keyboard or melodica thing.
Yeah, well, except he's playing a guitar synthesizer on that. He's using a guitar controller to trigger MIDI samples, so it sounds more like a keyboard player than a guitar player. But yeah, nonetheless, a guitarist. Actually playing an instrument called the Synthax, which isn't made anymore, but it was a new direction in guitar synthesis technology. Actually, you've seen one. You've been in the same room with one.
I'm sure I have. I've been in the same room with lots of instruments.
Well, Future Man from Bella Fleck and the Flecktones is actually using a guitar synthesizer. He's using a heavily modified Synthax to play drums. Yeah, that's what he's like. Got one of the few ones left on the planet.
Yeah, well, he's got one of the few lots of things left on the planet.
Well, let me put it this way. This record came out in 87, and that's when that technology was widely available. At the time, it was like a $12,000 guitar controller. It was very expensive, and Holds, you know, only the top guys could really afford them, and they were used. Larry Carlton used one, and, you know, Holdsworth still has a few, and Future Man probably has, you know, a couple.
He's the only one who's got like 12 of them sitting in his room.
I won't go into the technical reasons about why the Synthax was superior to and different to the guitar synthesizers that Roland is making now, because we just don't have the time. I'd want to talk about a movie I saw.
Well, I wanted to mention, though, that was in 87. That was when Synthaxes were huge, as well as the shoulders on suits.
Yeah, and winter coats that look like hand grenades.
Oh, that's, you know, right. The puffy things. Grace Jones and Grace Slick were very popular.
And that was Alan Holdsworth, and that song was called Sand, and it's from a record called Sand, actually. So, you know, I saw a movie. This is the second most popular movie ever about an autistic person.
Was he an excellent driver?
It was actually a she, and, you know, she was played by one of your favorite actresses, Sigourney Weaver.
She's not one of my favorite actresses. Where'd you get that from? She's one of your favorite actresses.
I made that up. She's not even one of mine. I don't know, Ghostbusters, Gorillas in the Mist.
Aliens.
Aliens, that's it, you know?
Okay.
Although I have friends who love her, and this movie was actually, I saw it reviewed on Ebert and Roper or whatever it's called, and I liked this.
Who's dying.
If I'm not mistaken, it was split. There might have been split thumbs on this one, but I actually liked this better than it was reviewed. You know what I mean?
I got you.
This film starts out with Alan Rickman, the wonderful English actor, in a little cafe, and this girl just walks right up to him. Her name is Vivian, and says, "Can I sit down here?" and just sits down. And she tries to smooth talk him into giving her a ride to Wawa, Canada, which is some little town in Canada.
Sounds like a French thing, Wawa.
It might be, or a Jimi Hendrix pedal, effects pedal.
There you go.
And ultimately, this Alan Rickman plays a character named Alex Hughes. He ends up succumbing, as it were, and giving her a ride. And I'm not sure if I should give this away or not, but something terribly tragic happens on the ride. You know, there's a collision and somebody dies, blah, blah, blah. So I guess I'll just tell you, it's the Vivian character. And the Alex Hughes, there's no way to avoid it without talking about this film.
I think I've seen previews of the film anyway, so I know what you're talking
about. The Rickman character feels compelled to go to Vivian's mom's house and explain that it was an accident, and he feels terrible. And that's the Sigourney Weaver character, and she's this obsessive neat freak, a very high functioning autistic. You know, she actually can communicate. She's not entirely disconnected from the world around her, like, you know, we see autistics portrayed even in Rain Man, or right, or even less functional autistics than that. And he ends up developing a little relationship with her and staying there for a while. And he ends up developing relationships with several people in the town, including a Royal Canadian Mounted Police and the neighbor that Sigourney Weaver referred to as a prostitute who was not.
Is his name Dudley?
Dudley?
The RCMP guy?
No, it was not Dudley Do Right. I really enjoyed this movie a great deal. There was a lot of emotion in this film. There's a lot going on. And the one thing I agree with the reviews that I've seen on television about this film so far is that occasionally there are a few scenes that are forced. For example, the Alex Hughes character reveals that he has murdered or killed someone, rather.
Just to see him die.
In his past. And we realize that there are a few demons from his past, and they sort of explain what those are. And those demons from his past kind of interact with what's going on now. And there's two scenes in particular where it was just a little forced for me, you know. It was just a little like I wanted to look away. I was like, oh god, I saw that coming, you know. It was a little bit uncomfortable, but on the whole, I really enjoyed this film. I mean, it was full of plenty of wonderful surprises and unexpected moments and a lot of emotion. And I think Sigourney Weaver did a great job.
Was this a Bruckheimer film?
No, this was a Mark Evans film. It's a 2006 film. It's a UK/Canada production, and apparently it's not rated.
Because when you were saying about things being predictable, I was thinking that maybe...
Well, most of the film was not predictable. It was full of plenty of wonderful, pleasant surprises, but there were two scenes in particular that I just kind of went...
Cut the blue wire!
I cringed, when I saw the scenes, but, I mean... You should, at the very least, see this film for the three main characters. Vivian, the daughter who's killed, she's played by Emily Hampshire, and I'm going to search the internet movie database to see if I can find other films that Emily Hampshire was in, because even though she had a very brief appearance in this film, I thought she was wonderful.
I've seen other Hampshires, but she's the new Hampshire.
Exactly. Alan Rickman, who plays the English guy who was driving the vehicle that was hit by another driver, which caused this terrible tragedy. His performance is amazing.
He's good enough. Everything.
He's just great. And Sigourney Weaver is a wonderful actress, and she plays this. I love films that reference other films, and this film references the
Aliens.
Not Aliens, the other film with the autistic
Rain Man.
Yeah, a couple of times. And this film, by the way, as a person who cannot consume gluten, had more gluten-free references in it than any other film I've
really?
Ever
You're
seen.
Probably more sensitive to those, obviously.
Well, I'm not sensitive to it in a bad way, but let me put it this way: the only other film I've even heard of mentioning gluten-free products was Death to Smoochie. I think it was that film that
You're
Danny DeVito did. I haven't even seen it, but I was told that there was a scene where Danny DeVito was ordering gluten-free hot dog rolls. Somebody told me that, right? This film. I don't know if you're aware of this, but autistic people, I know I've said this to you in the past, autistic people respond to gluten-free diets. They become less disconnected. They become more functional. Many of them do when they eat gluten-free. So there's a variety of scenes in this film where there's food on the table and people are bringing over dishes and, Alan Rickman's character will say, oh, she can't have that. That's not gluten-free. A woman brings over a big, giant chocolate chip cookie and, oh, no, she can't have that. It's gluten-free. I mean, there were like five or six gluten-free references. And the funny thing is there's another person who goes to the films often. I see her there who is in the local celiac support group. So she and I just kept, looking at each other anytime they made a gluten-free reference. I thought it was kind of cool. But I enjoyed this film. Again, I liked it better than it
Cats.
Was reviewed. I have not seen Cats.
That was awful, by the way.
I heard it was very good, but I would recommend this. I give this a modest thumb up, a somewhat flaccid thumb.
Thumb pointing horizon word.
It's 5/8 up, but yeah, I mean, Alan Rickman, at the very least, check out his performance, really great. And again, Emily Hampshire, the new Hampshire, as Vivian was phenomenal, and I look forward to seeing her in other films too.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, guess what?
I don't know. Tell me.
I got a secret to tell you.
What? Oh. Wow. That distorted a little bit.
Tricked you.
What's going on with the distortion on the klaxons?
Well, you got to put some distortion in there. It's heavy metal, man.
Rock on!
Yeah!
Yeah! Check us out on the web, www.bloodyveg.com.
I am John, and that's Rich.
That's right.
We fail to say that every single time.
Yeah. And the good news is I don't have to give $10 to my friends today.
What's that?
Because nobody remembered my birthday was today.
It's your birthday today?
Yes, it
Holy
is.
Crap.
August 11th.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
I'm an awful friend.
You're terrible. So send feedback to feedback@bloodyveg.com.
I'm still reeling from the birthday news.
It's no big deal.
It is a big deal because
we're going to run out of tape here. We'll talk about it next week.
All right. Forum. BloodyVeg.com.
Anyway, you've been listening to the VIB.